Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Season 5 of And the Writer Is with your host, Ross Golan. Before I give my spiel, I want to acknowledge the music army that listens to this podcast every week. Since starting this, the And the Writer Is community has literally changed the history of the music business by helping pass the Music Modernization Act, gotten songwriters added to Album of the Year for the Grammys, and still is advocating for positive changes for our industry on a daily basis. So thank you and congrats. Now, as you know, I've written with hundreds of artists and writers over the years, and my favorite part of each session is the first hour when we catch up about life, the industry, politics, composition, whatever. So this is a journey of learning why people write songs, how people write songs, and most importantly, who the people are who write the songs. I'm producing this with the great Joe London, Big Deal Music Publishing, and Mega House Music Management. If you want to listen to the songs we discuss in this podcast, follow us on our socials, find out about special live events, or buy that merch, aka that hat I always wear, go to our website, www.andthewriteris.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at Bandzoogle. Built for musicians by musicians, you can use Bandzoogle's tools to easily design a website, an EPK, sell your music, merch directly to your fans, and it's commission-free. Bandzoogle also recently added a crowdfunding feature, which lets you crowdfund your next project commission-free. So think about it. Your fans want to help fund your album. You don't need a record deal anymore. You can just use Bandzoogle. So go to Bandzoogle.com, try it free for 30 days. Be sure to use the promo code ATWI, and you'll get 15% off your first year of any subscription. That's ATWI at Bandzoogle.com for 15% off of any subscription. Songwriters, think about your favorite hit song and what makes it an earworm. You could be the writer behind the next song that goes viral. Enter the 20th annual NSAI Song Contest presented by Martin Guitars and Strings and CMT. You could win several prizes, including the one-on-one mentoring session with L. King, myself, and fellow And the Writer Is producer Joe London. The lyric-only winner will score $2,000 cash and mentoring session with award-winning songwriter Tom Douglas, as well as other coveted prizes. Send in your best songs now through October 31st at nsai.cmt.com. Welcome to And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. Today's guest is a 24-year-old multi-number one, multi-platinum songwriting prodigy. In just a few short years, she's already vocoded herself to the top of the charts and followed up that smash with yet another bigger number one, which not only lived at the top, but also got a Grammy nom for Song and Record of the Year, all the way from Melbourne, Australia. That's pretty good, eh? No? I was like that. I actually don't think I could repeat that. This human advocates for other humans. Her soft-spoken strength has already made a lasting impact on the LGBTQ community, as well as bravely becoming an inspiration for the healthcare movement in the songwriting community. Not bad for someone who famously can write a hit in 10 minutes. And the writer is the incomparable Sarah Ahrens.
Oh, hey. Can you follow me everywhere and do that?
Just like that. We were just talking about going to Erewhon at like the grocery store. You'll walk in, I'll do this intro, and you can walk over and get a latte. And they'll be like, wow, do you want a grande or
like, what
venti?
Are you? I feel like they'll like pitch the $18 smoothie like really hard after that.
Totally. I know that smoothie. It's like, you know, on occasion you feel like I have to try it just to see what it's about.
I did. I took one sip and I was like, I'm going to throw up. And then threw it out.
That's...
But I only did it because they looked at me like... Like, I said, what's a green... Whatever. I had a green smoothie conversation with the person, and they were like, but it's $18. Like, looking at me like, you cannot afford this smoothie. I was like, okay. I was almost like, six of them, please. Like, I was
just,
so
just to show her.
And I didn't really... I hadn't been paid at that point either, but I still, like, in my head was like, okay.
You just did an American accent better than my...
Thank you. Thank
Australian
you
accent.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
not good, I know.
I feel like doing an Australian accent for an American is, like, no offense, but it's hard.
It is. Why?
But American's
why is it
easy.
Hard?
We grew up on, like, American TV shows and movies, and we sing in an American accent.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's, like...
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So let's go to the beginning. But you're from Melbourne, right?
Yes, I'm from Melbourne.
Are you a fan of Australian league football rules?
I am.
AFL.
I'm a St. Kilda supporter.
Yeah. Nice.
I used to live across the street from their, like, training ground.
Crazy.
I didn't, like, understand it, but I was like, okay, sports, cool.
I don't think people realize how... I went to the big stadium. There's the in
They've
Melbourne.
Changed the name of it.
What was it? It was like the MCG.
Yeah,
what was it?
That seems like it. The MCG.
Yeah, MCG. And now what is it?
Marvel. I think Marvel bought
it. It's huge. It,
it
has like 100,000.
Or that's another one. I've maybe messed it up. But there's, yeah, like a huge thing.
I think people don't realize it. When you have Australian football rules, there are like 18 teams or something like that in the whole league.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And they're from neighborhoods. So it'd be like West Hollywood versus Silver Lake. And then it would be, you know, Thousand Oaks versus Torrance or something like that. It's
yeah.
just like
St.
like
Kilda's
local.
Like, I lived in St. Kilda for a bit.
But these are pro teams, so you probably knew yeah. some of the players, I would assume. Or, like, maybe you went to high school with kids that went to...
I don't do sports, but I'm sure that I've crossed paths with one
by accident.
I mean,
it just seems so crazy because it's not... Here you have one team per major city. You don't have 18
that
teams
are like
in two cities
suburbs.
Or three cities. You know, it's basically
yeah,
just Melbourne,
sure.
couple teams in Sydney, one in
yeah.
in Brisbane or something like that, and maybe one in Adelaide or something. But it's like... almost all in Melbourne.
Yeah, Melbourne's very...
It's like Quidditch.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't know. Look, if it was, I'd probably watch it more. But.
Yeah. I don't know why I started talking about that, but I did.
No,
okay.
But it felt important.
So when did you start playing music? Are your parents Oof. Musicians?
Nope. Everyone in my family is not musical. That's
Who's
like a
everyone
nice way
in your family?
It. Like parents...
You have
brothers.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have two full brothers and then a spattering of like step siblings.
Okay.
And none of them are musical. Oh, actually, one of my stepbrothers is musical, but we didn't like grow up together. He was like a different house to me, but he's technically musical, but we didn't ever cross paths. So anyone that I grew up in the house with wasn't musical.
How did you become
musical?
I don't
really know. I think I just always sang. Like, out the womb was just like, you know, singing.
Do you remember the first song that you sang around the house?
Natural Woman, 100%.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it the Aretha version or was it the Carole King version?
It was, I think it was both actually. But I think it was Aretha. Like I remember it initially as Aretha.
Yeah.
But I think it ended up being like, my stepdad was like, you know that Carole King actually wrote it. And I was like, oh my God, that's crazy.
So did that make you want to write? Were you
no,
like at some 3-year-old age?
I was
age
just
where
like, that's confusing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, why are two ladies singing yeah. it? Yeah.
yeah.
I don't think I was super enlightened at that point yet.
But you just you sat at a piano and sat at a guitar and played chords on both. So you've
yes.
obviously, when did you start playing instruments?
Probably just like when I was a kid. I think I sang a lot and then that I got like a crappy like Casio keyboard and I would do the thing where you can like it lights up the keys that you're supposed to be playing to play the song and then I would be like oh. And I would like sit there for hours and just like.
So you're like the first person who's actually taught how to play using that.
Using that function.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then I never used anything I did from it, but like I would just figure out chords and I like figured out the like C, G, A minor, F because it's so like not easy, but you know what I mean. But I would just sit there for like 8 hours playing it around and around in a circle until I eventually wrote a song on it.
What was
like
that
it
song?
Was. Oh, it was bad.
Do you remember what it was called?
maybe. I maybe remember bits of it.
Wow.
There are like many songs that were written on that chord progression.
What's the first one you remember?
The first song I remember, like properly remember, went, together we apart, together we will shine, together all the time, forever you'll be mine. I was like, oh, oh, as a kid, oh, oh. But at the time, I guess it was like impressive.
How old were you though?
I was probably like 10 or 11.
You know, my first song was called Steve the Dog and I was 14.
No.
And I told the
story. Oh, 14? That's like
a bit late. It was a story of, I mean, I think I was dabbling a little bit, but that's the first like song I remember being like, I wrote this. Like, it was like it's 6 minute opus. I mean, my friend and I were just writing these like funny songs. So like,
that's
I didn't
amazing.
Know. But like, so when somebody says, well, I just happened to write Together.
Yeah.
And it's like something
I wrote
singable,
like a pop banger when I was like, I wrote like an OG Lady Gaga pop banger when I was a kid.
I mean, that's already more advanced. I mean, that actually sounds like a song.
Yeah, it was a song.
Yeah.
It worked.
When did you figure out that you could record this? Or
I didn't. I actually, there was like a thing at my school. I just started high school, which is in Australia is 7 to 12. That year 7 to, grade 7 to grade 12.
Right.
And I just started there. And I think like in orientation, I'd sat down at a piano in the music room because like primary school didn't have a music room. And I sat there and I started like playing and singing. And I think someone like overheard me and like told a music teacher. And the school got asked to do this like competition thing. I didn't know it was a competition, but it was like a thing called like Cool Schools where they get like a bunch of public high schools to make an album. And there are 10 tracks on each and it's 10 students / like groups from the school, like a band from the school, whatever.
It's a public school that does that?
Yeah, it was like a competition that like came to a lot of public schools.
Sure, sure.
Like
I
the
see,
whole
I
state.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Or the whole country, maybe.
Yeah. That
and,
seems so progressive.
Yeah,
that's
which
really
is like
cool.
Now
it's
looking
really cool
back, I'm very like, wait, what? But it was like years 9 to 12 were the only ones that were allowed to participate.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like volunteered to be the photographer for it and go around to the like on the studio on the day and just like take photos of everyone like recording their songs. And I think someone like pulled out or something, or like the teacher overheard me singing a song I'd written or singing, and he came up to me and he was like, do you write songs? And I was like, yeah. And he said, how many have you written? And I probably at the time was like 15, but I was like 11 and I'd written like a few songs. And then he was like, we have one more spot on this. We're not supposed to put like people below this age group, but we couldn't find a 10th group / person. So can you do it? And I was like, sure. And because I was at the thing, like taking photos, no one ever like, it was all about the older kids because they thought I was just like taking photos of them. So
sure.
They were like, whatever. And then they all left one day and I did my one at night. And I recorded like, the guy like recorded the piano in and I sang it. And my like stepdad came in and he was listening. And then like, I think the next morning I like, went in and they were playing it back. And these like teenagers came in and they were like, who is this? And then someone like pointed at me and I was like in the corner,
and
like with
11?
The camera. Yeah. And they were all like, what? And it was, and then I ended up like winning an award from that. Like out of all the schools in the country, like my song on that album was like won like the singer songwriter award.
Did you at that point think, oh, when I'm older, this is just what I'm going to do? Or
no, but that like fake plaque thing they gave me, it was literally like a CD that had something printed on it, like in it, like it was supposed to look like it was like a vinyl like plaque. That was what I looked at in my bedroom whatever 7 years later and was like, that says songwriter on it. And like I realized every singing award I'd won said songwriter on it, not singer. You know what I mean? I never got like the best singer, I always got like the industry award, or like this, I got songwriter of the year at my singing school. And then I was like, that's interesting.
The songs you write that clearly are written from someone who can sing. You know what I mean? Like there's certain people who write for melody and that are fun to sing. I mean, that's one of the things that we always talk about. It's like, is the song actually fun to sing? Like, do you want to sing this? Would you want to sing this at karaoke or in your car? Or do you want to sing this? Not necessarily do you want to listen to it, which is fine. That's a different kind of song. But you write songs that are fun to sing. You know, was there a part in that process where you were like, no, I mean, like you were saying, you saw these plaques and you saw a songwriter. Do you feel like you've given up on being a singer?
I don't want to be a singer. I think giving up is...
Did you want to be before?
I think when I was a kid, I don't think when you're a kid and you're singing in like whatever, I don't think you ever look at it as like you think it's going to be your career as in this fake way. I never was actually like, oh, cool, so I need to get a record deal and need to go do this. It wasn't like that. It was more like, I like singing. It was in like a way more naive way. And I think when I was like 15 or something and I realized what it entailed and like actually what the like physical job was, I was like, oh no, I'd like given up on music completely when I was kind of 15 or 16 and really focused in on school.
What were you focused on in school? Did you want to be
I just love high achieving or whatever and like proving people wrong. So I think I had a moment where I was like doing all creative subjects and the counselor at school or whatever was like, if you do all creative subjects, you can't get over 90 for your like end of year score. And getting over 90 is like your mom's proud of you, whatever. And that's like the big thing. And if you do creative subjects, they get marked down because it's like easy to do like okay.
Yeah.
But it's not easy to do like absurdly well in them because they're so like subjective.
I mean, that's what got me into a good school was that I was good at
music
and music and theater. That got my GPA up enough that good schools were if you're properly good at it,
you can get a really good mark. But it's just like easy to get like a good
mark. Of course. Yeah.
And it's like hard to exceed at it past everyone else.
So that's like a national comment though. They look at your grades and if you have all grades. So this was to get into college? Is that what the counselor? Oh, I see.
And then I was like, well, I can do that. Fuck you. I'm going to get over 90. And I dropped all the logical subjects. I got marked up on purpose because I was like so pissy and I'm such a bitter person. But I dropped maths and I dropped whatever else, like history and geography. And I did psychology, which was like the softest of the sciences. And I did English, media, art. Like I did oil painting and I did music.
Are you a good artist?
I can oil paint portraits of people, and that's like the only...
Does it look like them?
Yeah. I'll show you later.
Cool. I'll send you a
My stepdad's like a painter. I could do it. I haven't done it in ages, but my stepdad's like an insane artist. And when I was a kid, he taught me how to do oil paintings. And I just have like a weird...
Is there a similarity between that and music for you?
Nope. I feel like if anything, it's like the opposite. I feel like with that, I know how to do one thing because someone taught me how to do one thing. With music, I have no clue how I know how to do it. And it's like any instrument or any song or any music I just click to. Whereas with art, I'm like, it has to be oil painting. Like I can't do any other type of paint. And it has to be like portraits of people's faces because I just know how to do it. I know the formula in my head.
But you don't think of... When you write music, you're not thinking at all formulaically.
No.
You just write
what
hit songs.
Good.
Yeah.
I like...
I hate you so much.
Whatever.
It's so hard. I hate you so much right now.
This feels good. I think it's going well.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Wait, when you said you're a bitter person, you don't really seem like a bitter person. Are you actually a bitter person?
I'm like a revenge person. But
really?
Not in like a... I'm like a positive revenge. Like if someone tells me I can't do something, I will go and do it very well.
Yeah.
I will achieve very highly in it.
Yeah. What is that right now for you?
There are so many things.
It's okay. We have time. We can edit through. And if this is 3 hours long, we'll edit it.
I think it's
so
everything.
Knock stuff out. Give me number one.
I think just like, ooh, Oh, there are so many things. I feel like I could like executive produce an album. I feel like that's a thing that like, I didn't know. It's more things that like haven't been done by small women that aren't the singer. I feel like I could like, I don't know. There are just so many things that it, and this is more like the world telling you can't do it. But I feel like becoming a songwriter, everyone was like, okay, if you say so, give it a go. And I was like, well, I'm going to go kill that.
Yeah.
And then that was the same with school. I ended up doing like extremely well in all the subjects. Got my name in the paper. Family was very proud.
Because you're, you because scored I got, over 90?
Yeah. Did I scored you, over 40 in like all the subjects and then got over 90 for my overall score.
By the way, that means almost nothing to me.
I know.
The score just, system
I was
is different.
In the newspaper.
But
I,
it sounds, yeah. No,
it was
I mean, that's
good.
Cool.
I was in the newspaper. Yeah. It was fancy.
Yeah, of course it was. You start at some point. Did you go to college?
For a minute.
Where?
I went to a place called Monash in Australia.
Okay. And did you study, what did you study there?
I studied film and television and communications.
What in film and television?
Oh, it was like theory. It wasn't like,
oh,
it's not like LA. Australia's like, if you're studying film and television, you're like analyzing, you're never doing anything physical.
Yeah.
And the same with music. It was all like, I used to go to the music department and like just pop my head in, check it out. And it's all just theory. I think the only jobs you can get in Australia are quite practical.
Sure.
So if my view of what my life was going to be was I was going to work at like a TV station in Australia, maybe for like the morning show, but I'd be like a person with a clipboard and I'd have like a little headset and I'd wear all black. I'm really suiting that today.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like behind the camera and be like, guys, you've got to, like, I'd be that guy. And I'd like organize things. And
that. You can still probably do that when,
yeah. Look, it doesn't look as good as
when music isn't when music stops working out so well. You know, you can always go and be the lady with the clipboard.
Or I can just go around to studios and oil paint people.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a court, like when they don't allow cameras in a courtroom, and there's the guy who sketches it.
100%. I'm like in the studio, just like.
You want to know a really funny story?
Yes, always.
This is potentially deletable, but my, but maybe not. I don't know. We'll see how brave I get.
Yeah.
But after my first album, it like totally flopped. In this is like 2004 or 2005. Yeah, it's just like, you know, toured around, sold no records. And I was pretty depressed. My sister was a commercial agent. She's like, you should audition for commercials. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I did theater growing up, but I was like, I don't. She goes, just get out of the house. Go, you'll meet people. And the very first audition I have is for Subway, and it's shooting in Sydney, and I book it, the very first one. And they flew me that weekend to Sydney for a week.
No.
And like SAG rules are, if it's international, you fly first class, you get picked up in a limo.
No.
You stay at a 4-star hotel. And
what?
You go in, and there were like 100 extras, and they all thought I was a famous actor. I was like, no, I have, you know, I'm in a band, and this is like... And but then it was like this commercial where they shot it with an Australian guy and with an American guy, but it was like the whole thing was like the F word, which was supposed to be fresh, but it was all like a play on the F word.
Yeah.
And it was like in Australia they could play it, but you know, Americans wouldn't allow it, which
so
turned out
like,
to be great.
Sweet. No one ever
there's no evidence of this commercial, or there's evidence if I'm, you know, duct taped in a closet, I could probably find a way to like find it. But like first time I was in Australia was because I was like, I don't know, maybe this music thing isn't working out, and ended up shooting a commercial for like 5 days. And
I've probably seen it.
Yeah, you
doesn't
probably
that
saw
make
it with,
you feel good.
No, you
we've met before via the TV.
No, they didn't air me. They aired this. But the other guy was like...
You didn't even make the cut?
Well, it was just me doing the whole commercial. And it was like 4 commercials. Okay. And then they had this Australian guy who's this really good looking, like... he was in like a daytime show in Australia. So for sure you know that guy.
Probably.
Which I'm sure I can hunt down.
Yeah, please
but,
do.
That is a true story. Moving on. So... when in there are you like, screw going to finishing college, you know what, I'm gonna go and write and win ARIA awards?
I haven't won one, to be fair.
I thought you were at some... Oh, it was... Wasn't it... nominated.
I'm about to join the Nominated Never Wins Club.
Oh, sick.
I love it.
Nice.
It's a nice place to be.
Yeah, sure.
No, what happened? Yeah, I was studying, and then I had a large surgery, and that kind of, like, flipped everything on its head.
What was that?
I had my ankle replaced, but it like went south and I got staph infection and like,
whoa.
It was like a near ending experience. But there was a moment where a doctor just like walked in and was chatting about everything and then went, oh, by the way, you should apply for disability pension if you haven't already. Cause like, there's no way on earth you can ever work a normal job. Like you couldn't sit for 9 to 5, you couldn't stand for 9 to 5, you can hardly walk down the street, so you can't stay awake from 9 to 5. Like, that's, he was just being logical, he wasn't like being rude or anything.
Sure.
He was just like, in Australia that's 9 to 5s are everything, so he was kind of like, you should apply for that now so you start getting the payments like when you leave the hospital.
How old are you?
19.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wait, so can I, you explain what happened to your ankle in the first place?
So I have rheumatoid arthritis, which is like autoimmune situation, and I've had it since I was 6, so I don't really remember not having it, and it's just been like progressively worse my whole life, and then it really kind of like hit a wall at that point. And then I had a moment where I was like in my room and I saw that like award that was like a songwriting award, and I was like, that's a bit weird. I don't know. And then I think, yeah, Sia wrote Diamonds, and she is so big in Australia as an artist already that it was quite a publicly known thing when she'd written songs for like Katy Perry and Beyonce and all these people. And I think that was like a crazy moment. And then I went into the rabbit hole, which is like, you know, Diane Warren, yeah, Julia Michaels, and like Bebe Rexha, and like all these people that have written these crazy songs, and then you like find out that they've written like other songs you love. You know that first moment you realize songwriters are a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, it was like so amazing. And I'm sitting in my bedroom like, holy shit. And I think I was like writing diary entries at this point because I was really like bored out of my mind. I've been in hospital for so long. And I still like, I'm scared to look at them, but I definitely still have one that's like, I'm in hospital and I just found out about this girl, like Julia Michaels. She's only a year older than me and she's written all these hits and I really want to like go be a songwriter. I think that's what I'm going to do. And like, I can't believe that it's like
that it
so
worked out,
weird.
And now, yeah, you're friends with all these people.
Yeah, I know. That's the weirder bit. And I've definitely like told Julia, I'm like, you're the reason I'm here.
That.
Yeah, of course she does. She's the sweetest person ever. Yeah. So it was like, it is just this weird, it's such a weird turnaround moment. But yeah.
So when you left, what's the next step to go from, well, I'm going to leave this hospital where this guy's like, no, you can't live a normal life. You're like, okay, cool. I'm not going to live a normal life. I'm going to go write a bunch of songs. And then do you just like walk over to a studio?
No, like, I didn't even know like, what a studio was.
What's the process from being like, I want to do this. It's in my journal. And I think even when you write it out or you say what you want to do.
Yeah.
For anybody, it adds
solidifies
like,
it.
Yeah, and it adds like an accountability to at least yourself.
Yeah, I think I like told my best friend as well. I like went to her and I was like, it was like very official.
Yeah.
I think I'd never played my songs for any of my friends or anyone except my stepdad. And I'd kind of gone to my best friend's house and I sat on her bed with my guitar and I was like, and she's so blunt. Like, we call her the blunt one of the group because you'll come up and she'll be like, those sunglasses are ugly. But she's like not being mean. She's being like, I'm letting you know so that you know that they look ugly. Yeah. And I kind of went to her house with my guitar and I sat down on her bed and I was like, tell me the truth. Am I good at this? And I like sang her like 2 songs, I think, which was like mortifying for me. And she was like, if you put it in Destiny's Child terms, she's like, this is literally what she said. And she like hates that I tell people this, but she said, as a singer, you're like the Kelly. You're like really good, but you're not like Beyonce. But as a songwriter, you're the Beyonce.
Wow.
And she hates that she said that.
Why does she hate that?
Because I think it makes her look like she said I was a shit singer. But no, like at the time I was too. So she can like that's fair.
Well, first of all, you know, there were other people that she could have named in that group that she didn't. So let's say that it's not.
Don't hate on Michelle,
I'm
okay?
I'm not. I'm just saying.
No, it's fine.
Songwriters, you could be the grand prize winner and score up to $5,000 in cash, one of 12 Martin guitars, as well as a mentoring session with L. King, Joe London, or myself. The lyric winner will win an opportunity to be mentored by award-winning songwriter Tom Douglas, as well as other coveted prizes. Enter the 20th annual NSAI Song Contest presented by Martin Guitar Strings and CMT now through October 31st at nsai.cmt.com. NSAI, the National Songwriters Association International, is one of the biggest supporters of songwriters and played a major role in helping pass the Music Modernization Act, a historical piece of legislation that allows you to have a future as a songwriter. This is your opportunity to experience industry access, one-on-one mentorship with hit songwriters, and fund your creative passions. Song and lyric-only categories are open now for submissions. We can't wait to hear your songs. Today's podcast is brought to you by the musician website platform, Bandzoogle. For regular listeners of And the Writer Is, you already know you can use Bandzoogle to design a website, EPK, you know, sell your music, merch, commission-free from your website, use the tour calendar to promote your shows, collect emails from fans, send professional newsletters, yada, yada, yada. But Bandzoogle just did some new things since season 4. They added fan subscriptions. So now your fans can pay a monthly fee in exchange for exclusive rewards and access to your music, giving you recurring revenue for your career. I mean, think about it. You're basically like the Taylor Swift of do-it-yourself musicians. You can now easily add any kind of content to your subscriber pages, including a blog feed, music videos, photo galleries, and more. When you want to send an update, you can simply send a messenger to subscribers using a built-in mailing list tool. And like all of the Bandzoogle sales, you know, tools, the subscriptions, all these things are commission-free. So all payments from your fans go directly into your account. So go to Bandzoogle.com and try it free for 30 days and use the promo code ATWI to get 15% off the first year of any subscription. That's Bandzoogle.com, promo code ATWI to build your website for your music. I will say that, you know, like I'm a pretty good singer, but I think I'm a much I've learned to write for my voice. And when you're limited on some level, that it, you know, I'm not doing a bunch of runs all over the place.
If I know, it's such a cop out. I love it.
What to
just
do runs,
and be like, this is good. Like when I know I'm writing a shit song and I'm kind of in there, and I'm like, I still want them to think I'm good.
But that's like, I don't know. I just think that there can be an advantage to not being, the Beyonce of singers while you're trying to also be a writer. Because I think those people think, well, let me show you this, and you're like, no. Don't worry about that. We'll get that in the ad libs when we're recording. Yeah. Let's write the song.
Let's like get a good song.
Yeah.
Well, I don't record until the song's done. That's like a thing.
Yeah.
And I think that helps me. If anyone's like, just go on and do some melodies, like on the mic, I can't do that because I'll just do runs. And everyone's like, sick. And I'm like, that's not a song. That's like me just like flexing.
Yeah.
Like it's really, I always have to write the song before I record it, I find.
I want to ask more about that, but you go from telling your friend I'm going to be, you're now the Kelly.
I'm the Kelly of singers, the Beyonce of songwriters. That is a compliment and a half.
I think so too. That's why I'm saying there are ways you could be, she could have gone and been like gone for the jugular. She didn't.
Yeah, she didn't. She was really, it was a supportive thing. Also in Australia, I think it's like, even now,
I hope you say also in Australia, Kelly's the one that everyone loves.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be amazing?
That's what you should, whatever you're about to say.
Kelly is actually like dope in her own right. But like it's a whole, whatever. At the time, from face value of Destiny's Child time.
Yeah.
That was like saying something. Totally. And then I think I just like decided to do it. Like I just in my head was like, I was still studying and I was still working as a babysitter. killing it.
Oh, yeah.
So I was still, like, full-time studying and
did you see any kids and stuff when you were babysitting?
I told the kids how to sing.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah. It was a rookie. Yeah. I was a singing teacher.
You must have been the coolest babysitter now that they're like, you know, you don't understand who babysits for me. Or babysat for me.
I actually visited them last time I was home. Nice. Like the most recent family.
Yeah.
The girl is like the coolest thing ever. She loves making playlists. Like I would come on, like take them home from school and her like fun time would be going on Spotify and curating playlists. And I was like, you're the coolest kid I've ever met. It was really weird because I went back there and I was like, tell me, like, what music do you like at the moment? And it was like a while ago. And in Australia, with Khalid, Young, Dumb and Broke was like absurdly bigger than Location. It was kind of like the other way around.
Right.
And she was like, I love Khalid. And I was like, which song? And she was like, Location. And I'm like, good girl. You know which one was like... the dopest one.
Yeah.
Like, they're both great songs. But I feel like that one for me is, like, his career-defining song.
Yeah, and you're slowly publishing this girl.
Yeah, I really, in my head, I'm like, I just want...
Yeah, exactly. Right? You're already pointing out what you focus on.
Yeah, like...
Well, let's go into the professional stuff. I mean, how did you end up getting... You know, I don't know who LDRU is. I have no idea who they are.
Yes.
But Keeping Score is a multi-platinum song.
Yeah.
You obviously weaseled your way in somewhere.
I made my way in. I kind of decided on Sony ATV, I think, because Sia was Sony ATV, maybe. But I had the tab up in my computer all the time.
Yeah.
And I just, like, emailed... a billion people. I figured out a life hack that if you look at the way the emails, like they always put the like intern's email on like the thing, but it's first name dot last name.
Yeah, right.
No, like I feel bad that I've said this publicly now, but at sonyatv.com.
Sure.
So I was like, that's interesting. Yeah. And then I just started like aggressively emailing everyone, like even like American A&Rs. I would just like Google singers or songwriters I loved and find interviews of them talking about who signed them, like things like that. And I just went crazy and sent, I would write a song every day and I would send, like, record and send the one I thought was the best from
would
that
week.
Would
you record at home on...
Yeah, on just, like garage bands.
Yeah.
Like, properly bad.
Yeah.
And then one day I got a voicemail message while I was babysitting. Didn't answer the phone. And they were like, who called you? And I was like, a telemarketer. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
And then they left a voicemail. I was like, oh, that's weird. And I listened, and I still have this voicemail message.
Oh,
and
cool.
It was Marie at Sony ATV in Australia, who I'd been like emailing, and she's just like, hey, I've just listened to your song. Can you give me a call? And I like freaked my shit. I like didn't even call her back. I called my stepdad. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then he was like, and what did she say? I'm like, oh, I haven't called her back yet. And he was like, you're an idiot. Hang up on me and like try.
Yeah.
And she never answered when I tried to call her back. And then I emailed her and I said, hey, like, sorry I missed your call. I was busy, but like, call me back. And she didn't. And it had been like a week or two. And I was like, fuck, this woman doesn't give a shit. Like, whatever. And I had it one day at university that I had like classes back to back. And I was like, today is my last day of giving a shit about whether this woman likes me or not. I'm going to call her between every single lecture today. And if she doesn't answer by the end of the day, then like I'll go fuck myself pretty much. And then I called her in the morning and it would only ring like four times. There was something weird about her phone. Now I'm aware that she's not very tech savvy. So I'm like, I understand the picture here. But I would call twice. And I didn't think that it had caller ID on it because it was like a home phone number or whatever, like a landline. So I'd call twice. She wouldn't answer. I'd go to, and I left a voicemail on like the first one of the day. And then I went to my class and I called twice in between that one and the next one, went to my class, called twice. And then in my last class of the day, I was like in the middle of the lecture theater. I was really just smack bang in the awkward center. And I was just telling like my friend next to me, like this woman, like she called me last week and I can't get in touch with her, da, da, da. And then the class started and it was about halfway through this very boring lecture. And I looked down and my phone's ringing and it says like Marie Hambly and Sony ATV. And I was like, and I just got up. I was like, I don't give a fuck. And I answered it and I went, hey, one sec. And I just walked out of this lecture like mid this person talking about something boring. And I don't think I went back after that actually. But I answered and she was like, I want you to come to Sydney. I want to like see what you're like in a studio.
Did she laugh at how tenacious you were?
I think
I feel like there's like a level where she's probably like, listen, it's okay. I'll call you back.
I'll call eventually. No, she's bad at answering phones. So I think she was like, thank you for being good on me because I'm like shit at this.
Yeah.
Which I get.
That's
like,
a good teammate then. I mean, when you have that kind of, you know, already she's probably like, oh, then this is perfect.
Yeah. It did work. And I remember once I was sending her songs every week regardless. And I remember one of the emails, like she wouldn't reply to all of them, but she wrote back and went, this one's good too. And I said, sorry, I'm sending you songs every week. It's like a bit, don't mean to harass you. And she wrote back, harass away. And I remember being like, okay, like you're going to regret saying that, but okay. And then pretty much there was this like writing camp in Sydney that happens every year. It's like an annual thing that I didn't know about. Now I know that. And
it's the APRA one?
It's run by APRA. And I'd never been before. I'd actually won an APRA award when I was like 12. For a songwriting thing as well. Which was like, I won like $3,000 when I was 12.
That's amazing.
Like a songwriting grant. And I bought like a guitar and a piano with it. A whole other thing. But
solid writer.
So APRA is like a nice thing throughout my life. But I pretty much like, she hadn't gotten back to me about it. And I was like, Jesus Christ. So I wrote to her and I was like, where is it? Like, I'm booking my flights. Like, I paid for my own flights and I paid for my accommodation. I'd never been to Sydney before. I'd never kind of gone anywhere by myself before.
You didn't think that your publisher would pay for your flight?
Well, she wasn't my publisher yet.
No.
I didn't even know what a publisher was.
I'm gonna find your publishers at Sony ATV and make sure that you're reimbursed for all of these flights.
Yeah, you should, and accommodation.
Yeah, exactly.
I was sleeping on a few floors for a minute there.
I'm sure.
Buying some takeout, buying some pizza for those people.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And I went up for this camp and on the first day, they put up it was like you find out who you're in with on the day and they put up all these papers on the wall. My name wasn't even up there. So I'm looking up and I'm like, I have flown to Sydney. I've spent money and my fucking name's not up here and I'm deluded and I'm like crazy. And then I went up to the lady running it and she was like, oh, so sorry. That's really weird. And she just like wrote my name on one of the rooms. And I went in and wrote a song and they made me vocal it even though there was like an artist there. That was like actually like a really famous Australian band. And I like
what
ended
was the
up
band?
Eskimo Joe.
Okay.
It's a whole thing. Yeah. And they have a song called Sarah. And I asked so many questions about it. Yeah. Like later when I figured out it was him. But I would have been so nervous if I knew it was him before I went in. And pretty much his song that I wrote on the first day just like circulated wildly throughout the industry. And I had like many offers, but obviously like Marie was the one.
Yeah, totally.
You know, that was the first email I sent to out of the hundreds that I sent was to her. So it was like a weird.
Yeah.
It was like a beautiful moment. It was like, what a waste of my time emailing bloody everyone else.
There is something where the first person who responds who is at a certain level, you know, at that A-list level of publishers, there's just different. I mean, some of them are better suited for you, but if there's a really strong one that's like, I'm interested and they're corresponding with you.
Yeah.
The idea of shopping for the best deal often puts a strain on the relationship that does matter.
Yeah.
The one that you'll end up with anyway. It'll end up causing, you know, a lot of different, there's a lot of value in just being like, no, that's the one.
I don't think I even met with anyone else.
Yeah.
Cause I was like, well, she's the reason you guys even know who I am. So why would I go with anyone else?
But you end up with, you know, you have a few songs that come out in 2015, 2016. These songs are like one or two cuts in the first couple of years. Are you discouraged at that point? Or are you just sort of like, no, this is a blast. I have a publishing deal I can eat and I can go and write songs.
Well, I feel like the first 8 months I was like going to Sydney a lot and paying for it all myself. And I know, don't look at me like
Sony
that.
TV.
I know. And I was like sleeping on friends' couches that were like two buses and a train from the city. Like it was really far out.
Yeah.
But I actually love taking the bus there and it was like beautiful. But it was like a little bit rough. And it got to a point where I was like, how come no songs are coming out? Like they would just take songs from the reliable people that had already written them. Like, for like X Factor winner singles or whatever, they'd go with the same guys that write them every year, which I understand why. And also they were on a production deal to do them. So it was kind of like, I was just screwed at that point. And then pretty much I was in Melbourne and there's like a Sony ATV rep in Melbourne. And I was like complaining and I was like, I write songs the whole time I'm in Sydney. I'm doing sessions every day. I'm working so hard. Everyone says my songs are good, but then they don't use them. Like, I just don't understand what I can do any better. And it's been, like, 8 months. And I was also writing songs in my bedroom. And then Wheeze, the guy in Melbourne, was like, why don't you come over to the studio and, like, let's have a chat. And I went and met with him. And I played him some of the stuff I'd, like, done in my bedroom in Melbourne. And he was like, can you just send me the acapellas for some of them? And, like, let me just send out to a few people. Like, you're doing well. Like, just be patient. And I was like, okay. And then within the 15-minute drive home, I had an email back saying, this guy, LDIU, really wants this song and he wants it to be the first single.
Crazy.
And I was like, great, go, take it, bye. Yeah. Can I sign something that says that's going to happen? Like, please. And then pretty much we got to the studio and I met him and I was like, cool, who's going to sing it? And he was like, you? And I was like, oh, that was so my nightmare and like not what I wanted. But I just knew at the end of the day the song wouldn't come out. It's also like very, very much a DJ song. It's got a drop. Like,
were there TV performances? And
You
never played?
I did one at a festival wearing sunglasses because like I wanted free tickets to the festival. I'm really glad I'm saying this out loud. But no, he knows that anyway. And it was really fun. I took my best mate that told me I was the Beyonce of songwriting. She came with me.
Yeah. And also that Kelly was singing though.
Yeah, Kelly was singing. And then I'm on stage at this festival just flipping her off on the side.
Yeah.
And then that song came out and he was like, look, it might get on Triple J, which is like a big kind of cool culture station in Australia. And like Flume and Sia and all Tame Impala came off the back of Triple J, which is crazy. And now kind of like me to an extent, I guess.
Yeah.
But that song just blew up. Like it was number one on Triple J and went mainstream and was up for like three arias and was like bonkers. But no one knew who I was. It didn't have my name on it. Like, but it was a hit. It was a
everyone
huge hit
from
in Australia.
Home, so they're like, well, yeah, I mean, she was good at 11. At 11 when she wrote that song. I mean, is there a point where they kind of just assume, yeah, that's the natural path for a human?
No.
Or is everyone like...
Everyone still looks at me and is like... This is very weird that this happened. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not normal in Australia, like whatsoever.
Well, you know, one of the differentiators in the writers that we've had conversations with, some are people who studied and they had to grind for 10 years and, you know, they've kind of like rung the bell, so to speak, once or twice. You know, like gotten to the top, but it's like a long, long, slow educational process.
Yeah.
And then there's the, you know, the Julias and the Bennies and these people who they don't think about it. They just keep writing hits. And, you know, and the fact that you have...
That's a way to look at it.
You have, you know, your first song out gets nominated for an... ARIA award.
Yeah, but I'd also written like a few hundred
songs. Totally. I mean, but and
yes,
that's,
the first one that came out.
The first one that came out, and you're right. I mean, there's.
But I'm quite all a quality people. Control person.
Yeah.
Like I, my nightmare is like a song, a bad song coming out.
Yeah.
Like it hurts me.
Sure.
Physically, but I was also on a clock. Like in my head, I was like, I'm gonna be in a wheelchair in a few years. I need to kill this now. And I had this theory where I was like, if Sia was in a wheelchair, because I obviously loved Sia, but I was like, if she was in a wheelchair, they would build a ramp to the studio to get her into it, which is right. True.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool, like that's all I need to be.
Yeah.
Like I need to be that good. So I was on a clock in my head. So I think I worked like absurdly hard.
Why did you feel like, I mean, obviously the doctor said that this is going to be tough, but you know, you haven't, you're not exactly like lazy of a
no.
person. I mean, why didn't you say, well, let's take it slow and make sure that my, in a way that, I don't know, why did you feel like you were on a clock? I mean, I understand
I just like, I could hardly walk down the street at that time. Like no one really knows it because I'm really good at hiding it.
Yeah.
And no one has known it till now, but like I could maybe walk for 5 or 10 minutes. And if I did, I wouldn't be able to walk for like 3 days after.
Sure.
So I was just like, oh fuck, like this mobility thing is not going to last very long. And it had only gotten worse my whole life. There was never a point where I was like, wow, I feel like much better than I did last month. Like that was never a thing.
Sure.
It was like a slow decline. So I felt like, I was like, I really just have to be the best at this ASAP. And I'm going to do everything in my power to like be amazing.
Did
something.
You have any personal life?
No, not at all. Like zero personal life.
What brings you to the United States?
Well, glad you asked. No, I had that really big hit in Australia and I just was like, cool, next, as like all overachievers do. And I don't know, I think I was like starting to get weird, like depression-wise. I like kind of was just getting in this weird space and going to sessions and just like didn't know what my purpose was anymore. And then I was like, I need to go to America. Like I am running out of money because Australia doesn't make a lot of money. Musically. And I was like platinum's 70,000, which is like, it's a million here. So the ratio is different. And I just knew I had to go. I was like, this is how much money I have left. This is how long the visa's for. It's like a 90-day visa. And I did 89 days until 11 p.m. on the 89th day. And I worked every day. I stayed in the worst Airbnb you've ever seen in your life. With other people in it and took Uber pools.
Oh, you just got a room?
Yeah, I just got a room that didn't, the door didn't close properly. It was like a no air conditioning.
Who was setting up your
June.
Sessions for you? And
it started me just being like any human I know in LA. And then I went to one meeting at Sony TV here because that's kind of what you get as an international person right. that's signed to their company.
Sure.
And the meeting didn't go great. But there was this guy that was like fresh off being an assistant, Nick Brawl. And he was like, kind of walked up to me like as I was leaving, going to the elevator being like, well, that meeting was shit. And he was sitting in the back of it, obviously just like observing and learning. And he was like, I think you're really talented and I really want to help you. Like I've just been promoted to being a junior A&R and like I haven't signed anyone yet. So I really want to help you. And at first I got his email and I was like, sure, dude, whatever. And I kind of would like send him songs. And then he started like pitching my songs like crazy. And I was like, okay, Nick, that's cool. And then he really like just, I even have found out more now that he was like going ham for me. Like,
yeah, he's a real champion.
Yeah. I was just writing every day. And then he like, I think I got set up in a really bad session by Sony TV and I was like, fuck this. And then he called me and was like, please, 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 all the sessions will go through me. Like, I promise I'll only set you up with people that like I think you'll enjoy. And then he set me up with someone, Jordan Palmer, who's like still a good friend of mine now. And he's like a sick producer. And I was like, oh cool, I love this kid. And then from then on it was all like good stuff. And I would just, it's just that session thing. You write a song and then they go, oh, I want to write more songs with you. And then you do different artist sessions if it's the producer, or you go to different producers with that artist.
Yeah, there's no way to speed that up.
Yeah.
That process. I mean, it looks like your first five songs are all hits, but it is what you're saying. It's like it takes a lot of
writing. But I wrote, within that time, sure, I wrote like totally. 500 songs totally. Or something. But yes, the ones that have come out.
Sure.
Have maybe been.
But also it shows that, you know, there's this thought process of don't do a publishing deal and save your publishing. Nah. And on some level, it's like,
look, it depends who you are. It's different for everyone, but.
It is different for everyone. But one thing that you can show is like, before you had the publishing deal, you didn't have hits.
I had nothing.
And then
I'd never been in a studio.
You had a publishing deal and you had hits in the country you signed your publishing deal in, and then you went to the U.S. And
they funded that.
Yeah.
Like, that was my advance,
totally.
You know what I mean? If they didn't.
Yeah.
Also, I got a meeting at Sony ATV in the U.S. from it.
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't have that door open, then I may have never met Amanda.
Sure.
Like, yeah. There's just a lot.
Yeah, I think these companies are all very large. In record mm-hmm. companies, publishing companies, PROs, they're huge. They have a lot of people who work there. There are people in all of them that are qualified, good, strong, you know, publishers, A&R mm-hmm. people. And, you know, finding those people can be, you can meet with five people at a record label to find the right A&R person.
And it's nothing personal. They can still
totally.
Be good and look after someone else better. But I think that's so true. I think it's all about people. People always look at like companies like that and they're like so bitter about it. And they're like, oh, fuck the big company. Like, fuck my record label, whatever. And then I'm like, well, I know it's different for everyone and people do get fucked over. But for me, like, I am so grateful for all the people. Like, think about it. Marie signed me. This guy Wheeze got me my first big cut. I come over here. I meet Nick. Nick champions me like crazy. And then I meet Amanda. Like, this is all people at Sony ATV.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, whether they're at that company or another company, it's all about people.
Yeah.
So you can find your person. And I also get mad when, like, people dismiss the lower down. Like, people, like, Nick was an assistant 3 minutes before I met him, and then he was like a junior A&R and he smashed it, and now he's like killing it as well.
And that's probably the best advice I got at, because I went to school where they did have a degree in music industry and stuff, but the one piece of advice that I think that was like that stood out amongst everything else was be friends with assistants. Because they will become bosses.
But that's
and
so
the way
true.
It works, and that's how you build your community in your generation in the music business, is that the people that you meet in the beginning are going to be further and
they
further.
They come up with you as
and
well.
And eventually they'll be the Big Johns and Guy Moots and Carrie Ann Marshalls, and they'll be the heads of these big publishing companies. Nick will eventually be a president of a company because he hustled so hard as, you know, a junior A&R.
Yeah, 100%.
So, Stay, that was a big song.
Yes. So I'd done my first trip in LA, that one. And on the last day, I met Amanda. And that was like a life-changing, I now realize a life-changing meeting. She's like looking at me being cute. Okay.
She's in the room, full disclosure.
Yeah, full disclosure, the manager is in the room. For if I start saying something stupid and she needs to look at me and make eye contact.
Don't say that stupid thing.
Yeah, she'll say it. It's fine. She has no problem. But then she pretty much was like, put me on every email, send me every song you write.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
And then but when I got back, there was this writing camp in Colorado that had like 9 people. It was like a small thing that Amanda was curating, and Ali Tamposi actually pulled out. I didn't know Ali at the time. I didn't know anyone that was there except Alex Hope. And Amanda was like, do you want to come to Colorado next week? I was like, well, okay, I'll do it. Like, yes to everything. Like, I'm in. I trust this woman. And I met Noonie, and she'd like just gotten off a flight to Sweden, and we like wrote a song and we just hung out, and I was like, this girl's really cool. I want to write with her. And then like the only other day we both had free for our trips from our separate countries, was like we had 2 days. I canceled one of them, and then that one day we wrote Stay.
So crazy.
Yeah, that was like that's so weird to me that that could have very easily not happened.
It's also the first song that you write in the U.S. that I imagine that everyone in Australia heard just as much as they heard here, as much as they heard it in Sweden. I mean, that song was just so, so big.
That song that was everywhere. Kind of,
it's one thing when it's, you know, a big hit at home. And also people don't, if you're in Australia, you know Australia radio. Now it's more international because of streaming, but for the most part, you listen to that. It's cool when you can see it from a bird's eye view and be like, wow, everyone in the US and everyone in Australia and everyone in Sweden.
Yeah, I think it was when my friends, they would like go to Bali or some shit. Yeah. This is when I'd get messages from them, is like they'd be in Bali or like somewhere not Australia. And they'd be like, whoa, Stay is playing.
Yeah.
And that's when they'd be like, oh, it's not just like our little like nutshell of a country. Like hearing it there, it's kind of like everywhere.
Did you slow down after any of that? Nope. Like, did you celebrate?
No.
Do you know how to celebrate success?
No, I think I do it awkwardly. I like awkwardly make
what
us.
Does that mean?
I like made like Noonie and Linus and like I made them do it. It's like we did a spa day, but I feel like that was definitely like us being like, let's do a thing. Cause like we should probably celebrate, but we're like really busy. So let's make it something that's like,
but that's
relaxing.
All it takes. You still remember that as being a way to celebrate. Yeah.
But I was also
really
like
not good at that.
Extremely sick at the time. Yeah. So I had like, I couldn't drink.
What were you sick from?
Autoimmune disease. And I was super sick and I was on like this chemotherapy medication that's like small doses of chemotherapy. And I was just like a yellow person literally and was like not functional and couldn't eat and couldn't sleep. And it was like a weird time. I think I had like a meltdown when Stay went number one, where I was just, I think I like had this weird assumption that all my problems would be fixed if I succeeded in this nearly impossible career.
Yeah.
Because that in my head was like such a feat that it would eliminate anything bad in my life. Because if I can achieve that, then why would I be sick anymore?
Sure.
Or something. I now look back, I'm like, that's not logical. But I think I hoped that.
When we talked the first time, the concept that I was saying that, you know, we really need healthcare for songwriters
in
the U.S.
Please, you know? Anyone listening. Yeah,
and then, like, we 100%. You know, we make a lot of money for these PROs who have the numbers to, you know, of writers to support, you know, potentially a group insurance that we could all get decent healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, how is going through this process
with zero health insurance in the U.S.?
How does that work?
It was really expensive.
Yeah.
No, I went home really often. I went home like 4 or 5 times the first year just to pick up my medication because I couldn't get it here because it was too expensive. It was like a couple $1,000 per injection. So I would go home and they have to be refrigerated. So I'd go home and like get them in bulk, see all my doctors, stay home for only a week and then come back and keep writing songs.
It's crazy.
It's absurd. I don't know how I did it.
I think you said that didn't when Stay went number one, didn't your ankle break during that time?
Or when we wrote it, my other ankle, weirdly enough, it was the week we wrote Stay was like my last week in LA that year.
Yeah.
And I'd done like another small trip and it was my last week and I'd gotten out of my friend's car after a session, maybe like the day after we wrote Stay. And I'd been working every single day. Like I worked Sundays. I was like, I have no money left. This is my only chance. If I, like the visa people had told me like not to come back on, I needed a work visa and you need to have success out of your country to get a work visa. So I was like, I need to do this. And this is my only opportunity ever. Like, here you go. And then, yeah, one day I just like got out of the car and I took a step and my like left ankle like fractured. Just from like existing.
Oh.
Yeah. I was like, okay, cool.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah. It was like the weirdest. I like don't even. And then I went to a meeting the next morning, which I don't know how. And a session. I'm so weird. I don't know how I did it.
I mean, I complain when I have, you know, a paper cut.
So. I worked with an artist that was like yesterday that was like really late because they were like, oh, I'm not feeling well. And I literally said to the producer, I was like, I dare you to text them and be like, Sarah has one leg. I was like, wouldn't that just be so amazing? But I do get, look, everyone's allowed to be sick and be hurt, but I do find it funny when people are like, oh my God, like I have to cancel an hour before, or like you're at the session and they cancel because they like don't feel well. I'm like, bro.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay, so I know I don't want to jump too far ahead, but deciding to amputate your right leg is a incredibly brave and complicated thing to go through.
Yeah.
So I guess. When in the process was it, you know, this is the best scenario for me?
Wow. So I don't know. There was a moment where I think the disease was like getting a lot worse, but I was getting like a lot more successful. So I was like really busy, and I knew I was hitting like a weird breaking point moment where I was like, the wheelchair is coming. Like I could feel it. And then Amanda was like, why don't you go see a surgeon here? Maybe the surgeons here have something else to say, because the surgeons in Australia just like couldn't figure it out. And I went and saw a few surgeons, and I saw this guy at Cedars, and he was like, I really want to help you. Like, this shouldn't be happening to you. You're like a young girl. And I had like a secret surgery. I had surgery and booked a house in Malibu with Noonie, and we wrote songs like the week after I had surgery. We just sat there and wrote songs, and it didn't work. Like, the surgery didn't work at all. And you know, I don't have my family here, so that was like pretty brutal as well. And I was like, cool. Like, I'd expected that kind of. So I was like, that's fine that this is just my life and like what I have to, I just have to figure out how to deal with this situation. And then I think the surgeon was just like not okay with letting me leave the doctor's office without like something. So he did a ridiculous amount of tests. And I tried a bunch of weird treatments and like weird procedures and drugs and stuff. And then there was a moment where he just looked at me and was like, maybe you should amputate your leg. That's what I would do if I were you. And I was like, what? And my friends from Australia, my like two best friends from Australia were in town at the time, and they were like at Universal Studios, and I was supposed to like meet them at Harry Potter World later, which is like the best thing in the world. And it was like the weirdest morning. And then I went to Amanda's house and just cried my eyes out, like on her lap. And I think the first thing she said is like, don't worry, you can be a pirate for Halloween every year, was like the first thing Amanda said. And I know she was just trying to be like, oh my God, I don't even know how to deal with this or like talk to you. And I knew that that was it. But I kind of went to Harry Potter World and got a wheelchair because I like couldn't walk around. My friends, and I'm used to it with them. So we just walked around Harry Potter World and got butterbeer, and then like got home, and I was like, guys, I think I need to get my leg amputated. And I think they were kind of, they'd seen me go through it through high school. So they were kind of into it. They were like, will it stop? Like, please.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? Like,
how do you feel?
Now? Oh, I feel amazing.
Really?
Yeah. I
mean, you were saying that for years you were always hoping that you'd be able to say like, oh, I feel better now. I feel better, but it's been this slow decline.
I've never felt better in my life.
Oh, I love that.
I can't believe it. Like, I have to like pinch my, I sometimes like just laugh. Like, I'll sit in the shower and then, like, because I have to sit in the shower, but that's, like, a whole thing. And then I'll just, like, laugh and then be like, oh, my God, I don't feel like I'm dying. Like, yeah. I always felt hungover. Just, like, a constant state of jet lag meets hangover. So, like, couldn't eat, couldn't sleep, nauseous all the time, throwing up all the time, in pain all the time. And it was constant. Like, we'd go to the doctor and I would, like, lie. And they'd be like, what's your pain? And I'd be like, it's a 6. And the doctor would walk out of the room and Amanda would be like, I know it's higher than a 6. You've been limping all morning. And I was like, whatever. And then I think we were at the doctor the other week and they're like, what's your pain level? I'm like a 1, but it's like, I don't know, a bit. And Amanda like almost cried. I was like, this is so weird. I can't believe it. I'm like in shock.
That's amazing. I mean, there was a. It was cool that you could celebrate the Grammys by walking on, on the, you know, on the red carpet. You know, that must have been a huge moment.
Yeah.
Well, okay. The middle goes number one. Whoa. Number one for a long time. It gets like way too big.
Way too big of a song.
Like slow up, probably like started off on fire and then like got offensively successful.
Yeah,
and
sorry.
So I think everybody already knows like how big that song is.
I need to make a public apology for that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, honestly, it was, if it wasn't for the New York Times doing articles and videos it and you know, all the people, like it's just insane. But to go and see you on the red carpet was like the coolest shit in the world. I mean, after
it felt
everything.
Pretty good. Everyone there definitely thought I was like a Make-A-Wish kid though. Like on the way through, like everyone was like staring at me. I was like, and I was like, you all think I'm a Make-A-Wish kid.
But that's probably, like, maybe that's good for the world to learn about, like, oh no, I mean, this woman is writes hit after hit after hit, and it's, you know, and she's able to deal with that kind of adversity with, you know, with grace. I would imagine
grace
that,
is a strong word, but I'll take it.
Okay, well, you know, grace-ish.
I'll take it.
You know, the last thing I want to talk, because we have a, you know, a few more things, but
go ahead.
The Maren Morris song "Girl" just came out. You know, preach for John Legend. By the time this comes out, these things will all be hits, and it'll, so this will all sound dated. But "Girl" for Maren Morris came out, and obviously you have a good relationship with her. I'm sure that after middle that you guys had some rapport dealing with that. But this is a new song written, you know, for the two of you, let alone the song that you did with Brandi Carlile on the album, and you know, Commons, crazy. But "Girl" in particular, I posted it right when it came out because I was like, man, this song is so good.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
How does it feel to work with an artist that you kind of helped shine a light on in the pop world? Was it nice to write with her and be able to do this from scratch?
Yeah, it really was. There was like a weird thing with her. I always felt like we were meant to meet. Like, I know that sounds so cheesy, but I'd kind of like the year before... when Stay came out, the year before The Middle came out, I'm doing this correctly, I was watching the Grammys at my friend's house and Maren sang and I had no idea who she was. And I remember messaging Amanda and being like, oh, who is that girl? Like, what the fuck? She was like singing with Alicia Keys, I think. And I was like, someone next to Alicia Keys that's like standing on her own. I was like, oh, wow. And then Amanda was like, not your world. It won't happen, but like, yeah, she's dope. And I was like, okay, thanks, like, cool. And then yeah, like a year later she like cropped up on a demo in The Middle and we all heard it and we're like, what the fuck? And Amanda's like, remember last year you like messaged me about that girl? I thought there was no fucking way on earth that girl would ever work with you. And I was like, cool, thank you, so much faith in me. And then I met her like randomly at a Grammy after party. She walked past me and I just like awkwardly went up to her and was like, hey, like I wrote The Middle. Sorry to interrupt you and your people. And she just like flipped. She was like, oh my God, that's crazy. Like, I'm so happy I got to meet you. I really wanted to meet you, blah, 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 blah. And we sat down and just had like a chat and we got along so well. And then, yeah, we were like, can we please write something together? And it just felt, it was like one of the easiest, those sessions with her were some of the easiest sessions I've ever done.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know when an artist doesn't even need to tell you what they want to sound like? They just sound like that. And it's like absurd.
Yeah.
And she's just like...
She's a real writer. I don't think people may not know how much she's a real writer.
She's a real writer.
And I respect any artist who can write as well as she can and is willing to take outside songs like Middle... But then writing her own shit, can write. I mean, in the country world, everyone in Nashville knows how good of a writer she is.
She's
crazy.
But
for the rest of the world, that woman is a real like A-list writer, regardless of her singing and her artistry. You know, she's
totally
amazing.
And she's phenomenal. It was crazy.
Is it true that you wrote "Stay" and "Middle" in like 15 minutes each? Are those not true?
It is.
They're kind of true.
It is true.
So, when do I quit my job? No, I mean, that's crazy.
No, I talk shit for an hour or two. Like, we were in the studio for more than 15 minutes. Okay. But there's a moment where I just lock in and then I black out everything. And then I wake up and I'm like, I wrote a song. And then everyone thinks I was like on Instagram the whole time.
Yeah.
There's like 15 minutes where they turn around and they're like,
is that how you write every song?
Yeah. Co-writing is like was a very new thing to me because I was like, wait, what? Like, you are not inside my head? That's weird. So that's why, like, co-writing with artists, like, finding someone like Marin, where I was like, it just mushes, or like Noonie, it's like, oh, sweet, this is cool.
Sure. It's pretty shocking to hear it. It's another thing when it actually works that way. I do know the feeling of locking in and getting through a song pretty quickly, at least a first draft, but I don't know that those songs always turn out to be stay in middle. So
I've got bad songs, don't you worry. My theory is I'll write it in like 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is, but like it might be bad. And instead of like harping on a bad song, I'd rather just do like 15 minutes of a song and then like I'll write, it's like pull up another track, I'll write a second one, and if that one's better.
You guys are very similar in that way.
Okay, I'll take it.
You should.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to go to the next section, which is a 5 for 5 section. I'm going to just name five people, and you can tell me the first thing that comes off the top
of
your
head. Can it be main things?
Sure. Well, let's start with Sia.
She's incredible. Hero. Good things. Is it one word answers? Am I ruining it?
It doesn't matter. There really aren't rules.
Okay.
You won't get like, we won't stop and delete the interview.
Yeah, so it's one word.
Let's go with Marie.
Marie, I love Marie. I'm so grateful. She's like my cheerleader. She's like the reason, like she opened the pearly gates to a good place. I don't know why that was like pearly gates and then death came into my head and I was like, that's the wrong image. But you know what I mean? She really like opened the door and was like, please flourish.
Sure.
And go do your thing.
Zed.
Anton. I just think of his Skittles machine. He's got a Skittle machine in his house.
What does that mean?
Like it means you press a button. No, you press a button and it like, and you can pick the type of Skittles you want, and then the cup goes under it, and then the cup goes into the cup thing, and then you've got a cup of Skittles.
It's
phenomenal. I don't know. I feel like that's like not his shining feature, but to me, it's his. It's his best feature.
Yeah, sure. Taste of Rainbow. Look at that. Free advertising.
Please feel free. I'll put my address on the end of this.
Right.
Send.
Amanda Berman Hill, the greatest publisher of all time.
Honestly, she's looking at me. It's weird. She's the best person I've ever met in my life. I can't use more words to describe how incredible she is. She's really like my hero. I want to be like her. I want to be more like her every day. And I can't imagine how I would like possibly be breathing still, like literally, if she hadn't kind of been there. I'm gonna cry.
You're allowed.
She's crying, guys.
Noonie.
She's my sister. I'm like such a, like everyone I love is like my family. So everyone you're talking about, I'm like, I love them. And it sounds really.
You should.
But my people are my people, you know?
Yeah.
Noonie's like my sister. Yeah. She's so funny. She like gives me sass. Cause we both had our biggest hit together. Like our first big fat bonkers hit. And she'd been like doing some cool shit. And I hadn't. Like that was my first thing. And she was around for a minute doing like Charli XCX and Mo and all this cool. And like Avicii and stuff. But we still both had our first big song together. So I was just stressed out of my mind. And she'd be like, fuck it, let's go on a holiday. Like she was that for me. That was the sister that was like, calm the fuck down. You're fucking amazing. Fuck it. Let's just like go get facials or like something like that. Like she's
Let's get facials.
She literally does that. She'll be like, fuck them, Sarah. Like everyone, like fuck everyone. I'm like, I love you. Thank you.
Is there any advice you have for young writers or people in the music business?
Oh, there's so many things in me. One thing that I've realized is if you want it, you'll get it.
Nice.
So like if you want to be a songwriter, like there are songwriters that are called songwriters that can't write a song. So if they can do it, Like, if you can physically write a song, you're already one step up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think if you want it, you can get it. It is there. Like, I had no, like, why the fuck am I here? You know what I mean? But, like, I worked my ass off. But also I think it's all about people. Like, it is safe to say sticking around the right people. Like, I've said no to meeting or working with a lot of people that may have traction in that moment or maybe like a big deal or like a tyrant, like whatever it might be, and it just isn't my cup of tea. And instead of just like pandering to the thing you're supposed to pander to, I think just finding good people, not caring if they've blown up or not yet. Everyone's a nobody before they're a somebody as well. So I think like finding your people, whether it's other songwriters, artists, producers, publishers, managers, A&Rs, whatever, it's like extremely important and maybe like the most important thing.
I've never done this before, but Amanda, do you have anything you'd like to add?
You need a microphone.
Here. For upcoming songwriters?
I don't know. Sure. Or
just talk about me. What do you think about me?
Oh my God, I'm so unprepared. This feels so good, you guys.
Hi, I'm Amanda.
I don't know. I think what Sarah said for upcoming songwriters is good. I think, you know, one of the things that we talk about in addition to kind of what she said is just like having a high moral compass and a moral ground. And I think that if you treat people kindly and fairly, that will often set you in the right direction as well.
Aww.
Quality.
That is quality momager info right there.
Yeah, momager. You know, so thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
This is really early. Usually it's hard to interview most people who are young because usually they haven't gone through life stuff or they've gone through something where they, you know, they've never really had the adversity yet to understand the scope of what they're achieving. And you know, you've done so much so fast, but you're also really important to the music business more than you realize yet. I mean, maybe now you're getting it a little more because you're walking down red carpets at the Grammys and shining a light on, like, quite literally on physically what you've
many
gone through.
Many minorities.
You know, but you're like, yeah. I mean, this is really just the beginning for you. And I wanted people to meet you now because you're very smart and you're savvy. Aww. and that's important because we need people to recognize how strong the humans are that are songwriters, not just, you know, the fact that we're writing songs all day, but these are really strong-willed humans who are working specifically to make you, the listener, a happier person or give you an opportunity to be entertained. And they're doing it because they love the craft and they love the art, but it's not without struggle. And so I appreciate you. Thanks for being on. We'll have
too.
To do this again in like 5 years when we'll roll
when
through
I'm
like
bitter
30 songs.
And like have no success.
Yeah, or that. Yeah,
back in the day when I wrote the metal.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I want to be like. Grandkids, I wrote the metal.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll like play in the house when people come in. That's like the doorbell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll happen for you. And I hope the next one isn't us talking about how the songs we just talked about were actually failures. But I don't think so. I think it's too late. I think they're amazing.
I don't know. We'll see.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Let's do it. Thanks for listening to this episode of And the Writer Is. If you want to hear music from this songwriter I just interviewed, be sure to check out our Spotify playlist or visit our website at andthewriteris.com. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to us. You can also like us on Facebook and Twitter. And the Writer Is produced by Joe London, edited by Miles Bergsma, and published by Big Deal Music. A special thanks to David Silberstein from Mega House Music and Michael White. Until next time, this is Ross Golan.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.